Thank you for being here with us on Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, and you're listening to Bummyaw, one of the music groups featured at Rock Awk, Juno's very first Indigenous music festival. So, everybody, mark your calendars, November 5th and 6th. It is the start of what Rock Awk hopes will be the beginning of a new tradition for this community and beyond. And a lot of Alaska Natives have dreamed of having an event like this, and perhaps none more so than Stephen Blanchett, or Kuchung. You may know him from his band Bummyaw, which we're listening to right now. Music critics have dubbed this the most famous Inuit band in the world, but Kuchung is also one of the main organizers of Rock Awk, and we are so excited to have you here today, Stephen Blanchett, to whet our appetites for what sounds like could be a watershed moment for Indigenous music here in Alaska and beyond. So, Stephen, are you really excited about this upcoming festival? Are you starting to feel tingles in the back of your neck?
Oh, my goodness. It's funny. Joy, my wife, just asked me that about an hour ago. She's like, how are you feeling? And I mean, and it's just, it's hard to explain because this has been a dream for many, many years, a long time. I think the first time I ever proposed an Indigenous music festival was about 20 years ago. And so this has been something that's been decades in the work.
But the interesting thing about it is it seems like it's more than just a first for Juno.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not just a first for Juno. It's not just a first for Alaska. It's a first for the United States. I mean, there's Indigenous music festivals. Sure, there are. There's some in Canada that I've played at and elsewhere around the world. And so there's actually a group of folks that come together, different countries, and they actually come together and they talk about like who's out there, who's the next band, who's the amazing artist that you have to have. And they plan out their festivals like years in advance. And the United States has never been a part of that group because there isn't a Indigenous-led Indigenous music festival. There are world music festivals, but that's different. What I've experienced in my almost 30-year career is, you know, whenever we played festivals around the States, we were always kind of, there is like a world stage often, or an Indigenous stage that's kind of off in the corner of the festival grounds. And that's just been our experience. And so that's why I was like, this is something that is just a necessity for Indigenous artists, especially U.S.-based Indigenous artists, to have the opportunity not only to perform at a festival, but to headline at one.
So what is the potential for putting Juno on the map for this kind of thing?
Oh, it's already like there's already a buzz going on. I have friends all across the United States in the music industry, folks that are part of like organizations that actually work on bookings and agencies and venues and all that kind of stuff. That buzz has already happened. I've been looking at some of the reposts that are happening on social media. There's places like Western Arts Alliance that are just like, about time, watch this festival, you know? So it's just like already getting that buzz.
Well, that is really exciting because Juno seems positioned to kind of become an Indigenous arts capital, at least for the Pacific Northwest. But do you think that this festival, even though a lot of it is apparently virtual, that it will have this kind of worldwide draw, perhaps, that will bring more things here?
That's what we're hoping for. You know, this is an interesting opportunity, right? Especially now within the pandemic that we're in and going virtual. We're going to do a big push, just really get the word out of this festival. So we're kind of thinking of it now as kind of like a trailer or kind of a just kind of drawing back the curtains a little bit and seeing a little bit of like what really can happen if we put on a full-fledged multi-day, multi-stage, multi-venue festival and with double the artists. We have 13 artists coming in and performing at this festival, both virtually and coming in person. Because that was the hope, that we were going to be having an in-person audience. But, you know, with the way that the cases are happening, it's just, we thought it best to just make it the best experience that people can get on the virtual stage. So that's what we're putting all our focus on, is the look and the feel of like what Indigenous festival in beautiful indigeneity on the virtual stage.
Beautiful indigeneity. I like that phrase. So is there some part of this though that's hybrid that is in person, or is it all going to be online? Because I know initially in the planning stages, they were talking about some in person, but then again, we've had a big turnaround in the COVID situation since then.
Correct. You know, unfortunately, with the turnaround in the COVID situation, there isn't going to be an opportunity to watch, you know, the live performances. But we will have, you know, like I mentioned, 8 artists coming in and recording and filming at the Centennial Hall. And so we have those scheduled out from, you know, the morning up until like late afternoon. And then we're going to just basically at like 7 o'clock, we'll have all those recorded components from the artists from the first day. And then we're going to push that out live. So it'll be a live stream. So what we're hoping for is to find some venues, some partners, so we can get together and have some watch parties. Maybe look out for some of the official watch parties. We haven't really quite made those solid decisions yet, but that is something that we're definitely talking about. And we want people to think maybe there's a chance for us to come together, at least watch this virtually together.
You know, this might be a silver lining in some ways for some musicians, because I'm thinking of one of them that may be coming, Whitney Youngman from Anchorage.
Oh, yeah.
She's an amazing blues singer, and I've heard her perform off and on over the years, but I don't think she has any recordings.
Yes, that's what this festival is all about, is who are those, like, amazing Indigenous artists that just don't get the opportunity to get to a venue like this, right? But they are, like, phenomenal. Whitney has, like, a soulful voice. Oh, my goodness. She's so good, and she's amazing at the guitar. So that's going to be just a treat for everybody to see her maybe for the first time ever. So that's one of the missions of this festival, is to create these opportunities for Indigenous artists to have a chance to perform at a festival, right? That's going to be our focus. We're going to be looking for these folks from, you know, when we're done with this one, we'll probably take a little break, but we're going to start then thinking of those artists in 2023. Who are those artists going to be? And start fundraising, hitting the ground and getting the support from the community and those sponsors, that so that we can bring more. But yeah, she's like one of those artists that is an example that hasn't put out the you know, those big official recordings. She's not on Spotify. You can find her on SoundCloud and some of the other sites like that. But, you know, you think of like Spotify as like the biggest, right? They're the biggest of all the streaming sites and platforms, but she's not on there. So not a lot of people would have get a chance to see her, but this is her kind of big debut and coming out.
And that's going to be exciting. Well, you know, I remember when you were a young gun, you and your brother, Philip, and you were starting to debut, and that was back in the 1990s. And I have to have a little disclosure here. I do know your mom, Marie Mead. Yeah. We've been friends for years. And I remember when you were testing the waters with Bumia, and there was this amazing sound, these African-American gospel sounds, harmonies merging with Yupik drum beats and Yupik language. And the funny thing is I recall that your mom said that all of this started at fish camp outside of Bethel. is that a true story?
Yeah, it is true. It is. I mean, we come from like a really super musical family, a family that told stories. I grew up listening to traditional stories, hearing those around the kitchen table, around while they're drinking coffee and sayup, while we were cutting fish on the you know, by the smokehouse. One of the things we used to do, me and the cousins, little cousins, we would just be trying to get the attention of all our aunties and uncles. And we had put on these shows, put on these performances on the beach of our fish camp, the banks of the Kuskokwim River. Just our fish camp was probably about 5 miles downriver from Bethel. And so that's where we spent our summers ever since I was a baby, right? But that was one thing that we loved, because we had a musical family. And sometimes our aunties would join in and jump up. And like my aunt Isku would jump up there and she'd grab her guitar and just start singing and picking. And my Uncle Trim as well, guitar player. My mom's a guitar player. That's a little thing that people don't know. She's a guitar player. And so like we heard and saw like our aunties and uncles just picking at the guitar and singing these songs, and so many of them in Yupik.
But that is what makes it so amazing, is there's some authenticity that breathes through your music. And of course, your father is African-American. And so,
yeah.
And I've heard that your grandfather would come and visit, and there would be these amazing song sessions of people just singing in the kitchen. So you grew up with all those influences. And when did it all kind of come together, this fusion of Yupik culture and African-American culture, sort of become, and now you've coined the phrase, Yufrican.
Yeah, you freaking, yeah. Oh, my goodness. I don't know. You know, I think the way it started, the way we came across this style was when I was getting ready to get married and I wanted to dance at my wedding, right, at the reception. And Philip had been with my mom and living with my mom, and I was living with my dad because they had split when I was very young. And so for a period of time, he spent like a couple years with her and just kind of following her around. And they would go to dance practices. There was Chuna McIntyre, Vernon Jimil Alrak, Teresa John. So he got to be immersed with like the Yupik songs and dances at a very early age, right? And so I had him to come over to my apartment to teach me some simple songs that I, you know, a simple dance, teach me a simple one to dance at my wedding. And when he did that, you know, just me being kind of the goofy guy I am and just kind of messing with my brother, I started singing harmony to a song that he was trying to teach me. And he was just like, hey, quit screwing around, quit messing around. But then we were like, I said, just keep singing. And we, you know, I sang and sang the harmony to it. And we just like, we're like, whoa, that sounds pretty cool. Drove over to my dad's house that evening and brought him down and sang a song to him. And he got blown away and was like, you guys stumbled upon something. You have something. And he got us all riled up. And that night, when Philip was driving back to Anchorage, this was in Wasilla, and he was driving back to Anchorage, he wrote our first song. And 2 weeks later, we had our first performance at the University of Alaska Anchorage at a reception celebrating the Native graduates of UAA.
My goodness. You know, and I have memories of a time in Bethel when you were about to perform for the Jemai Festival. And John Active, who's a well-known Yupik storyteller and often an MC at the Jemai Dance Festival, was kind of ruminating a bit, saying, you know, I don't know how these elders are going to take hearing Yupik lyrics to kind of a rock and roll theme. And he said, I don't know how they're going to like it. But did you have any trepidation about how that would be accepted by fusing these cultures?
Yeah, of course. But we also had confidence because the elders that we had shared it with, elders like with my mom, Marie Tyson, Ben Snowball, David Chinar, those elders that were readily available in my circle there, they were 100% in support of us and loved it. So we knew that we had these elders that loved it. So we were like, we had an inkling that it was going to be okay, but we did have some trepidation about it. But as soon as we sang that first song, Jaya Kanahua, you know, we hit it, Jaya Kanahua, and then we hit Munkasu. And then as soon as we hit that note, the entire building all stood up and started cheering and clapping. It was the most incredible experience of my performance life, my career, of any experience I've ever had in my life, next to the birth of my children. You know, it was just like amazing. And so like we were just like two measures into our song, and we had a standing ovation with our home community. And so right then and there, we knew what we were doing was was right.
And thereafter, all the kids across the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta were copying you at their own fish camps, trying to replicate that. How did that feel when you knew that kids were copying you?
that was what our dream was. We were hoping to find the next Bumiwas, right? We were hoping to start a kind of a music industry in Alaska of indigenous music. And you know, honestly, Philip and I had this idea that we were going to be these like big music moguls and producing these groups, right? But it just didn't happen. But it's now coming. It's like it has been happening. We have artists like Byron Nikolai from back home who has, he's just blown up, man. He's like so huge. And like, he's like our Justin Bieber. Like he blew up on YouTube with I Sing You Dance. And so it's been awesome to be able to work with him and to connect with him. You know, he's on my most recent album. He's singing and rapping in Yupik. We take him on with performances with us. Since he came on, we were just like, we have to mentor this young man and to make sure that he'll make it, right? Because the music industry is a tough industry.
Well, I will try to find him so we can hear a little bit of him. But I have Arias Hoyle ready to go with Tranquility. And he's another musician from the Juneau area.
Yeah.
And it's so exciting. You know, the Tlingit Haida Central Council actually funded a music video of his. So it's like a whole different environment than what you and your brothers started out, and that's kind of exciting. Before we hear a little bit of him, tell us a little bit about him. I know that you've been working with him, and it's not clear who is mentoring who necessarily.
Yeah, no, I know. AJ, Arias, Air Jazz. Oh my gosh, this guy is, he's a beast. He's so amazing. My wife's sister was like, sent me a text message, and it had a link to a YouTube video. And she was like, you have to watch this. And so I like watched it. Like, I was like, what is this? And then like, I was like, who is this guy? You know, right up, I was just like, I have to find out who this guy is. And he went and performed at the Elders and Youth. The Elders and Youth brought him there because, you know, he was just blowing up, right? And so I was just like a fanboy. I was like, where is he? He's here somewhere. And I did a beeline, looked for that big afro. And I saw that huge afro, and I went straight to him. I was like, what's up, bro? And, you know, right then and there, we hit it off. Like, we known each other for a long, long time. And I knew that I was going to be collaborating with him. And my most recent album, he's on two of my songs, you know, one rapping in Tlingit and the other one on that day rapping in English. And that's one of the, we've done two music videos together. Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing many, many more projects with him. So I'm so happy that these young guns like Byron, Ukitlak, and Air Jazz are just coming onto the scene.
And the interesting thing about Air Jazz, which you can relate to, is like Bumia is cross-cultural, that you mm-hmm. have African-American rap sounds, kind of the driving rhythm of that with Tlingit language. Why is that so powerful?
I don't know. It's just real. It's like a real connection. That's what he has. He has a serious love for his culture and for his language, and that is undeniable. And it comes out in his music and his performance. And like a young man like that is like, he's kind of like he's a unicorn, because he's so young and he came out fully baked, right? He knew who he was. He knew what he wants to do, and he was doing it and doing it so well. Like, it's so rare to see someone just come out of the gates like, just, this is me. Boom. Yeah, it's only going to get better.
Well, with a buildup like that, we got to hear him. We'll listen to him, go to a quick break, and come back, and then we'll hopefully get Byron Nikolai queued up here, because that's one that brings a lot of joy every time I hear him. So here we go.
Yeah, let's do it. Rock on.
Tranquility is a powerful thing, man. You'll achieve it. You just gotta die first.
I'ma say, I'ma stay, my mistake. Do not resuscitate, cause I don't wanna stay. Namaste, I'ma say, namaste. On this lay, I've gone astray. He's lost his way, yet the ancestors still with me. So I've achieved tranquility. Just gained an ability. I have complete tranquility.
It's pistol here, crystal clear as a pure stream. We disappear, dismissal of fear, your dream. A free spirit who steers clear of the fear we. I feel curious, it's queer, yet it cures me. Gave for my blessings, I'm positive destined. Being courageous, contagious, I'm positive testing. Deposited checks into my check-in, I reckon. My life's been directed by economic monarchs in heaven. Although I don't have a soul, just got life insurance. I'm making waves, riding currents. Dying sure is just on the surface. In no rush, it's lush, I have no sense of time. A loss of consciousness, as thoughtless as end to mine.